So here we go. Today is Success Saturday, and I put a thing out and calling it Spiritual Millionaire, Selling Out or Sold Out, you know? And we're going to have some fun with it. And as always, here's my contact info, note to self, and all the people I train. If you're ever doing a webinar, pitch webinar, educational webinar, whatever kind of webinar, always make sure you put up your contact info at the beginning, and I always forget to do it at the end, just so people have it, right? Especially your Twitter and your Instagram, which is becoming more and more popular. Well, it's real popular with the younger people, and it's starting to catch on everywhere. So that's my info. Dr. Will at Real NLP is my Twitter. Instagram, Dr. Will Horton. And I've started to put up a lot of videos on the Instagram, on the, I think they call it IGTV. So it's another place to get my stuff. Of course, you see me on Facebook. And working on my websites, the main website is nfnlp.com, nfnlp.com, yeah. That's the training site, that's the home site for all my trainers and a lot of information. And my drwillhorton.com should be relaunched this week, where all my personal stuff will be, the addiction stuff, the books, the trainings, all that. So let's get started, right? The only easy day was yesterday, so let's go to work. Review, right? So what have I learned about, new about success in the last week? Are you, if you've been following along, are you learning anything new? Is something started to change? How can you apply this new information? We're always working on blocks, right? And coping mechanisms that hold us back. And we really started working on our self-image and what's creating a new self-image with this on success. And today it'll be about Spiritual Millionaire. What can I learn new today? I always ask that at the beginning of a class or a session. How can I grow today? I'd like you to ask yourself that. What can I do differently today? And how can I add to my self-worth? Okay? And so we're going to do some things with that. And you're going to get a couple of techniques before we're done. So I pitch this as, you know, selling out or sold out. So does becoming successful, rich, famous, wealthy, whatever you're going after, you know, or all of the above, does that mean you're a sellout? Does that mean you're a sellout? We see it a lot, you know, in people that they'll look at people that are very successful and call them a sellout. You know, you'll see it in art, you know, like I'm a real artist. I don't do it for the money or this or that, or they'll look at the successful people. You know, I've seen it at hypnosis seminars and or conferences. You know, someone will point to someone that's quite successful in our field and they'll go, yeah, but, you know, I do real hypnosis. I don't do whatever that hypnosis is. It's just kind of interesting. But is this somehow tied to your self-worth? And is self-worth the key to success? Is it one of the keys to success? And how could low self-worth sabotage you? Right? Well, it seems like you'll get, you're not good enough. You're not deserving. You're not worthy, right? So if that happens, if you have low self-worth, again, if you feel not, if you do something, it's never good enough, right? You become, and you'll downplay anything good you do. You know, what's the old joke? I'd never join a club that would allow a guy like me as a member, right? And it's true, it's insidious. You know, you might think you're just being self-effacing, but is it something underneath it, right? Is it something underneath it? I have this, I will admit it. Yeah, I remember there was I was at a conference and I won a major award. Honestly, it was an award I wanted to win from this one group. And I won it, they gave it to me, and I lost the damn thing. You know, right after I lost it. You know, I couldn't remember what it just like, you know, it's a pretty big award, right? It's a big, you know, it looks like that. And it's like, I lost the thing, you know? That to me, you don't have to be a psychologist to go, what's going on here? This thing you said you wanted, you got, you automatically like act like it's not that big a deal, right? Or if someone gives you a compliment, can you take it? I meant to put that up there. Can you just say thank you? Or you go, oh, this old thing, or it was nothing, right? And again, it's that fine line, right? So where does this come from? where does low self-worth come from, right? And as Neville Goddard says in one of his books, he has a whole section of a book, that there's nothing to change but self, right? So, of course, it starts with family, you know? And I'm not being, I don't want to blame at all in this, but it's, you know, sometimes family might do this, you start instilling in someone not to have high hopes. You know, you don't want to, oh, you know. And so, you know, so it starts at that level. And maybe they were raised that way, the people that did it, the authority figures, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whatever your family of origin was, right? And maybe this is where the rich and successful royalty, people that are born into a different, almost, I want to say, caste, think a little differently, right? But also you begin, and this rears its head, at least in my opinion, thing, it little offhand statements, little kid says something, oh, you really don't want that. Or you don't know how much trouble that is if you get it, you know? Why should you have that, right? And again, if it starts getting implanted early, you know, or sometimes it's, you know, they'll use it, you've been bad, so you don't deserve the dog, the cat, the toy, the bike, whatever it is. So it starts settling in when you're quite young, right? And then when you get into schools, especially in the Western world schools, competition, rank ordering, you know, gold stars on the chart, right? Little, whatever it happens to be, that adds to it. What if you're not at the top of the performer, right? It's interesting. And then, you know, and all the testing that they do, you know, IQ tests, things like that. Some of it you may not have control over, but it'll rank order you, right? And I remember reading a study that some guy did that the most successful people, the ones they could find, successful money and career, things like that, the average IQ was 131, high 120, mid 120s, 125 to 135 was the sweet spot for success. It wasn't the 140 and above, which is ranked as genius. There's a lot of those in there, right? But the real sweet spot was that one, it was somewhere in the 120s to low 130s, right? Very bright, very good, you know? But we all know genius doesn't equal success. Yeah, we see that all the time. You know, sometimes it can sabotage success. But anyway, so what about this self-worth? And then of course, if it's already kind of implanted, and then the media gets involved, right? Especially in the consumer media that we have in the Western world, which it feeds on it. It just racks it up even more. You're not pretty enough. You're not thin enough. You're not smart enough. Your teeth aren't white enough, you know, yada, yada, yada. So it just feeds into that. So if this is, it just kind of gets in and it never ends, especially in the media part. It's relentless, right? You turn on the TV, you turn on the radio. It's constant, right? And so again, the result of that is low self-worth, which can lead to a victim mentality, right? Why should I try? The deck is stacked against me. I shouldn't even try, you know? And then it'll also start to manifest itself where you'll deny you ever even wanted those things, whether it's wealth, money, fame, power, whatever it is you're working on, I'll just call it success, right? You'll deny you ever wanted it. And then you start turning failure into a virtue. You know, you turn your failure into a virtue, you know. You're above material things. You're above wanting whatever it happens to be, right? And again, is, you know, if we're working on upping our success, it's just something to think about. So turning your failure into a virtue, right? And that victim mentality can run deep, right? That, and it's, I should have put up, a lot of people, when they look at this, they talk about the serenity prayer, you know? God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Big in the 12-step recovery movement, right? Everybody, little known fact about that. It was actually really was started, I think it was really pushed. It started in the 1930s in Germany, right? About what was going on in Germany at the time. And especially the idea of the things you cannot change. And of course, in the recovery community, they take that off with the addiction and that. But the most overlooked part is courage to change the things I can, including yourself. And then separating with, and the wisdom to know the difference. Most of us beat the shit out of our, excuse my language, beat the crap out of ourselves, trying to change things we can't change. You know, other people, you know. How many times do we see that in a relationship? I love them just the way they are, but they'll be even better when I'm done with them. You know, they'll be a better man or a better woman or whatever it is, right? And it's like, right? Or we try to change a macro level society all at once, right? So we beat ourselves up trying to do that, and we don't turn it inward into the courage to change the things I can, which is myself, my response to it, my triggers, all of those things, right? And again, so if you're going to, you know, it's like, and having the wisdom to know the difference. I can't change you. I can't change maybe the system or what's going on. I can't change the COVID situation that's going on. In fact, I'm starting to call it, it's CTSD, COVID trauma stress disorder is what we're all suffering from, right? That's out there. What can I change? I can change myself. I can change my responses. I can change my internal state to help me get to where I want to be and not turn failure into a virtue. And again, if you turn failure into a virtue, one of the things that begins to happen, you start looking at successful people as sellouts, right? Maybe you don't do that as much, but sometimes you do. I mean, we just do. I think my dear friend Albert's on the call, I think. And, you know, you see that with artists, you know, like if they get their break, oh, they sold out, you know. So it's just kind of interesting, you know? And then on the flip side, when you see someone get successful, if they do go back to their roots, sometimes you'll go, why are they doing that? And I always think of, from the acting world, a lot of you know that's my big passion outside of doing this stuff or with doing this stuff. Chris Evans, the guy that played Captain America, right? There you go. Albert says he's an agent as well as a psychologist, by the way. And he sees it in his agency, you know. But Chris Evans, Captain America, right? He's in the biggest movies in history. He is Captain America, right? It's kind of funny. I think it was Infinity War, which at the time was the biggest movie released. He wasn't at the New York premiere. And some people wondered why. Well, the reason he wasn't at the New York premiere, you got to remember, this is like a $200 million movie. All these superstars are in it. He's, you know, he's the second guy right after Captain, or right after Iron Man. But he was doing an off-Broadway play in New York City, making SAG minimum, or equity minimum, right? And so people wonder, like, why aren't you at this? Well, he goes, I'm an actor. So even though he was, you know, he was doing what some people would say, then they still flip it around the other way. You should be riding that train as hard as you can, right? And the fact, you know, he's walked away from that. But anyway, so you start looking at successful people as sellouts, you know, whether it's music, art. And again, I see it in the hypnosis world, you know. And I think when we do that, you're subconsciously saying that it means you're better than that. I'm better than that. I wouldn't do that. As I said, you see it with artists, business people. You know, our business isn't in it for the money. You know, we're not in it for the money. That's good. Okay, great. If I was going to buy stock, let me know. I don't want to buy it in your company. You know, we see it all the time, right? And it kind of begins to translate into the thinking that rich people are evil or bad. Now, I preface that with some are. Let's just be honest, some are. But are all rich people and great business people and all that, are they all bad? Some are, but are they all? But if that gets into your head, you're gonna push it away because you develop that love-hate relationship. Because if you, in your core, you begin to develop the idea at the core level that money, success, wealth, fame, whatever it is that you're going after, or all of the above, are evil. And of course, you're not evil. You're going to subconsciously reject it. So you'll sabotage, you'll blow things up, right? And if you're not evil, you reject it, you know? And then you start to hate yourself for wanting it in the first place. You know, so you'll see it. And so you you're flipping it in your head that, like, you know, you're not a sellout, right? You'd love to be sold out, whether it's your products, your books, your movies, your whatever it is, your seminar, your appointment book, you'd love to be sold out, right? But you think somewhere at the level that the only way to do that is to be a sellout, and it sets up a cycle of rejection. It sets up where you're going to blow success up when it happens, right? And it ends up as a rejection of yourself, right? And you start rejecting yourself, and then, of course, that's where addiction, eating disorders, all of these other things start to flow from. All right. And again, it's all based in the false idea that to be spiritual or good, if you're not into the word spiritual, you must struggle because poverty's rewarded, right? And a lot of the religions and organizations and bureaucracies and things, they create that idea that poverty is to be rewarded. It's virtuous to be poor, to struggle, you know, to live like Mother Teresa, right? Whatever it is, it's like, that's interesting, but, you know, it's like it sets it up that you're going to reject it. So the idea then becomes, can you be spiritual, good, virtuous, whatever words you want, and be successful, rich, famous, whatever it is you're going after? It might be a package, could just be successful, could be financially successful, your business, whatever it is, right? But again, this can ripple backwards. The reason I like talking about it, I'm talking about business and money a lot, but it'll be the same thing in your personal life. It'll be the same thing in every, you know, you'll blow everything up. So can you be spiritual and be a good, virtuous, successful, rich, famous, whatever it is that you want, right? So how do we flip your thinking, right? What can you do to start thinking of success as a spiritual quest, if you will, a virtuous quest, you know? Can you look at it that way, right? One of the easiest ways, I think, and from talking to people, is realizing you're going to become the example you wish you had, right? Maybe you were, you know, and it's just the way our parents were. It's neither good nor bad, right? But can you become the example that you wish you had back then? And to do this, of course, you have to forgive those that implanted it, right? And again, one of the quotes, and I'm not good with that book, but forgive them for they know not what they do. They didn't mean to do it. Maybe they were, again, you're a little kid. They're trying to set you up so you don't, like, you might call it set, don't have too high hopes or things like that. But sometimes it can be malicious, but can you still forgive them, right? So we have to do a forgiveness technique. Story I tell here is, I was an actor and I was doing pretty well. After I got out of the Army, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Art. And I was starting, and my addiction took away my acting career. It did. I gave it away. I gave it away. Nobody took it. God damn it. I'd rather drink. And, so then when I sobered up, you know, I went back to school. I still had money left in the GI Bill, so I didn't know what to do. So I went back to school. Anyway, I'm at college, and I'm going to get a degree in sociology and psychology. And since I already had all these credits from another school, I was in the theater department, and I was still acting, doing shows. And it was interesting because there's these kids in the theater department, it was Indiana University, and they want to be actors, they want to be singers, they want to be performers. And there was one young man, I still remember this, that he could sing, he could dance, he's a pretty good actor. He wanted to go, he was going to try out for Disney and to either do Disney cruises or the Disney thing. And You know, we're in class, we're talking about it. I'm like, hey, this is so freaking cool, man. Do it. What do you got to lose? I was older than everybody because I've been a veteran and already drank away a career. mid-20s, you know, all these were young kids. And the teacher basically told everybody, well, you know what we really encourage here is we want you to get your theater degree, but at the same time, get your education degree so you could teach. And I'm sitting there going, well, what if you don't want to be a teacher? You want to be an actor? You want to be a singer? You just want to be a dancer? And they were like, And I'm sitting there thinking about it. And that story is still in my head because the teacher that was talking about it had probably always, and I knew him, wanted to be an actor, got his theater degree, ended up getting his master's degree, started teaching. He never became an actor. Now he's a teacher, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't think that was his true passion, if that makes sense to you. So he was not, I would call him a dream destroyer, not a dream builder, right? And good part of that story, by the way, the kid did go do a couple of years on Disney cruises. And then last I heard, he did do, I don't know what he ended up doing. He was living in New York last I heard. And that's like decades ago. So, but at least he got to do it. But that teacher, for whatever reason, you know, was holding that person back, right? But thank God this kid didn't buy into it, right? And so we're gonna have to do a forgiveness technique for the people that did it, whether it's parents, the media, authority figures, and some of them overtly are gonna do this because maybe they didn't get their dream. They don't want you to have your dream. I hate to sound that way, but people are like that. Or they didn't know what they were doing. Right? But either way, you have to forgive them. And so to me, there's two ways to do it. I like the short version of, I can never say it right, Ho'oponopono, did I say it? Anyway, the Hawaiian one where I love you, I'm sorry, forgive me, thank you, that one, right? Seems to work quite well. That's the short one. And then with that, the mantra that you're a victor, not a victim, or I will be sold out, I'm not a sellout. I will be sold out, but that I am not a sellout. Some kind of mantra after you do the forgiveness technique, right? And so let's do the forgiveness technique really quick, whether you want to or not. So just think about if you have a little bit of some of these things we talked about of low self-worth, whatever it happens to be, and maybe it was implanted from family of origin, where you went to school, the teachers, the authority figures, religious figures, whatever it is, you know, and then of course the current society, especially when you were a little kid, that kind of fed into it. So just take a deep breath. And the easiest way is to close your eyes and imagine these people that you need to forgive. And you're doing it for you, not them. So imagine a beautiful white light coming down from the heavens into the top of your head, rippling through you, coming out your heart and encompassing all of these people. And you begin to think, you know, that you forgive them for they know not what they do. And even if they kind of were cognizant of what they were doing, you still need to forgive them. They didn't realize the repercussions. And so as you let this light come through you and come out of you and bathe them in that, you begin to say, I love you. I'm sorry. Forgive me as I forgive you. Thank you. I love you. I'm sorry. Forgive me as I forgive you. And thank you. I love you. I'm sorry. Forgive me as I forgive you. And thank you. And then begin to hear a mantra of that I'm a victor, not a victim. I'm a victor, not a victim. Or you begin to chant silently, I will sell out. I will be a sold out artist, therapist, but just because I can, I am not a sellout just because I'm sold out. So you get a little mantra going. I'm a victor, not a victim. I can be a spiritual millionaire. Good. Good. Now take a deep breath, and you can practice this later on. It's just a little something to practice. And now we're going to do a really cool technique. Here are the steps. It's magic mirror technique. And this helps with our self-worth. Because your self-worth is a combination of all your attitudes, values, beliefs at the subconscious level. You know, your self-worth is part of your identity, but it's not all of your identity, but it's a part of your identity. And so it's multifaceted. So here's a little technique that seems to help. I love this little technique. I call it the magic mirror. And if you are imagining looking in the mirror right now, right? Or you could, if your camera was on, you could see your picture in the video. And you see yourself as you are right now. And you begin to realize that as you see yourself in the mirror, as you are today, it's a snapshot of your past. It's a snapshot in time. So your entire past is behind you, but everything's changing. We take this picture in 20 minutes, it will be slightly different than the picture it is today. You might be a little tired, your eyes will droop, whatever happens. When you see yourself in the mirror, it's constantly changing. And those of us that have matured over the years, sometimes we look in the mirror and go, what is that? But, it's a snapshot in time. And what I want you to do is imagine looking into this mirror, this magic mirror, and maybe you're surrounded by mirrors, like when you're trying on clothes, there'll be mirrors to the side, you see yourself behind, so you can see every aspect. And as you do this, you see that you're a combination of your entire past brought you to this moment in time. And I want you to imagine looking into your current eyes. And as you do, you see a little bit of pain, a longing for change. It's not that you can't love yourself, but you're here and you want to go better. So you're one of the 3% of the world population that truly wants to improve. So you're longing for change. So you see that like a little bit of pain in your eyes. And you can see back behind you, if you will, to all those things that happened that made you who you are today. It's like you can see who you used to be. You're not who you were 6 months ago or 6 years ago, you know, whatever it is. And as you're looking into the past, kind of like if you were sitting in a car, you could look into the rearview mirror where you could see what's behind you. You begin to think of what beliefs or attitudes did you easily let go of? You know, some are way back from your childhood. Maybe at one moment in time you believed in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny, right? And then you did. So what beliefs did you easily let go of? And maybe you can see some beliefs back there that you let go of that took a while, right? And now as you kind of think of all those things, I want you to imagine looking into the mirror. And you see through you look deep into your own eyes, and you can see through this mirror to who you want to be, the future you, that'll have the beliefs and attitudes that will feel worthy of success. So really look into your future eyes, into your soul, and you see new beliefs and attitudes. They may not be totally clear, but they're forming. You're worthy of success. And you see that mastermind group that we've been working on, you know, your buddy board of your mentors. And they're around you in this future you. And as you see all this, and you're looking at the only thing stopping this new you from being real is the veil of illusion that you can't do it. And so you shatter the mirror and all the mirrors around you. So the only thing left is this future you that's coming into focus. Coming into focus. It's kind of like if you wear glasses, you know the thing of if you look in the mirror and you don't have your glasses on, it's blurry. And when you put your glasses on, suddenly it becomes clear. Or another concept I like is as you shatter this, it's like when you get out of the shower. And if you had a long hot shower and the hole in the mirror is all steamed up. So as you shatter it, it's like you're wiping off the steam. And so this new you is there. And you begin to see yourself as a spiritual millionaire, as a person that's good, and that can realize that money is just a concept. Good. So open your eyes. Excuse me, that's the magic mirror. And I want you to begin to see yourself as a spiritual millionaire. And we're going to work a little bit more on that next week, but it's that, you know, you're not fighting anyone or anything. There's no competition. You know, there's no shortage. What do they say? At any given time, God knows they're printing money, but at any given time, there are trillions of dollars in circulation, you know? And so what our process is to change our thinking to allow the money, the success, whatever it is that you're going after into your life. Cool. Let me stop the recording. Not the recording, but stop that. Now, so that's this. So next week, we're going to work on one more thing. I'll release the exact topic later. I'm going to stop the recording.